We've got our finger on the pulse of the nation right here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, there is a whole lot that is going on in our nation. We are dealing with a war on North Carolina. Now, the NCAA, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, declaring war on the state of North Carolina. We have the ongoing protests at the national anthem before games by NFL players. We have more speculation about Hillary Clinton's illness and being off the campaign trail while Donald Trump presses ahead in certain places and catches up in other places. And a whole lot more going on. A question I just posted on Twitter a little while ago that asks, how important are the elections? 866-348-7884. Are these the most important elections in our lifetime? Do we blow things out of proportion time and time and time again by saying, oh, this is the big one, this is the most important? Is it the same mistake we're making, or are there urgent issues at hand? 866-348-7884. And do you trust either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? I'm just asking, in terms of your own life, if you had to trust one of them with managing something for you, with handling something for you, with being reliable. Let's take this away from presidential elections. If you had an urgent matter that you had to entrust to someone of life and death importance to you, managing of something on your behalf, caring for someone close to you, you had to entrust this to someone. You had to entrust it to either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. We're not talking about national security. We're not talking about national debt. We're not talking about Supreme Court justices being appointed. Just on a personal level, if you had to trust Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton with something, let's say that major decisions had to be made in your absence, for your company, for a loved one, who would you trust more, or both or neither? Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? Just wondering where you're at. 866-348-7884. And some interesting allegations that the Republican Party is now less educated. And is that why they're voting for Donald Trump? Because only someone uneducated would vote for Donald Trump? You know what? Let's just play this clip quickly. Clip number three, Joey, this is Meet the Press and David Brooks talking about his Sunday New York Times column. So he's on NBC's Meet the Press. Clip number three.
For the last 20 years, if you look at how people behave, you can do huge predictions based on whether they completed college. How often do they vote? How often do they give blood? How many friends do they have? What's their marriage like? And there are just big chasms that open up socially. And this is the first election that we've begun to see those chasms reflected in the political polling. And so my question, this is really a serious worry. Suppose one party becomes the party of less college and who feel the headwinds. Mm-hmm. And that would be the Republican Party, I think. Mm-hmm. And suppose another party becomes the party of the tailwinds because they've got college degrees, and that would be the Democratic Party. Suppose our partisan realignment overlaps with a class alignment. And that, to me, is extremely problematic for what it says about what's going to happen.
Isn't that what we're seeing right now?
Again, the reason it's problematic is problematic simply in terms of charting out demographics, and we don't know how to chart them out as well. Okay, that's one question. Is it problematic because only the ones who go to college really know how to vote and really know what matters and what counts? That very thought would be quite problematic to me. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. I posted this question on Twitter just moments ago, so just the first several dozen votes coming in. In your opinion, how important are the upcoming presidential elections? So I gave three options. No different than before. Very important. Most critical in memory. So far, and it's just the first 53 votes as I sit here, 28% said no different than before. 26% said very important. 46% said most critical in memory. Now, this whole idea of college education, and depending on your college education, that will then indicate life trends and things like that. I'm all for education. I've spent years in school and thoroughly enjoyed my years in college, and in particular grad school through my PhD at NYU. Since 1982, I have been teaching at or leading Bible colleges, ministry schools, seminaries to this day. Tonight, I teach our weekly class at Fire School of Ministry, the goal of that being practical ministry equipping as opposed to liberal arts education, but it's education nonetheless at the college level. But my point is this. I have spoken to many people, and in fact, I'm curious. I'll throw this question out as well. I have spoken to many grads of secular colleges in particular. In fact, there was a season where I polled hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, and I asked them, did what you learn in college help you with your life vocation, help you with the things that are most important in life, help you with your future? And the overwhelming majority said no. Now, I fully understand that many people go to college, they learn a trade, whatever it is. They may go into the into legal field, they may go into medical field, they may go into education, they may go into the business world, they may go into media, whatever. But they spend years learning, studying, and that prepares them for the career that they have. I fully understand that. And it's vocational and it's practical. But when I polled hundreds of grads from secular schools, overwhelmingly, they said no, it did not help them. In terms of the things that are important for the rest of their lives, going to college did not help them. I'm curious on your end what your experience was. Would you say going to college helped me? Because I was in school, it really helped. It equipped me. I'm talking about a secular college, all right? Maybe you went to a Christian college and you have a very different perspective. But I'm curious. You can call in as well, 866-348-7884. But if you will go to thelineoffire.org and click on Digital Library, look at one of my recent videos, Cal State Combats Microaggressions with Segregation. We have increasing censorship on our college campuses. We have an increasing attack on freedom of speech. We have a reigning political correctness that shuts out other ideas. And instead of even, say, studying the classics or studying American history, you will get someone's perspective on the classics or someone's perspective on American history. And what you end up is learning someone's ideology rather than learning how to think on your own, how to think critically on your own, and reading and dealing with the primary sources, which is what's so important. Picture taking a class on the Bible, and the only exposure you have is from a former evangelical who is now a very zealous atheist, and they're going to teach a course on the Bible. And that's what the course is. Here's the perspective of this professor on the scriptures. And that was your only introduction to the Bible. Picture that versus in this class, we're going to read the Bible and understand its purpose in history and understand it in its literary and historical context. And then you draw your own conclusions. You would get two completely different classes, completely different perspectives. Now, a few years back, friends, in North Carolina, when there was a vote on redefining marriage, even though Democrats outnumber Republicans in North Carolina about 3-2, if I'm correct, even though the side wanting to redefine marriage outspent the conservative side that wanted to leave marriage intact as it is, outspent them at least 2-1. The vote was overwhelming, decisive, and strong. 61% said, do not redefine marriage. 39% said, marriage should be redefined. So it was a very, very strong vote. And if you look at a map of North Carolina, you'll see, if you want to paint it red for those that said don't redefine marriage and blue for the ones that said redefine it, because that would largely be the difference between the Republican and the Democrat perspective. You would see that except for, I believe, four counties in the state, all of the others said do not change marriage. So you would paint that red. What were the counties that voted the other way? Well, Mecklenburg County, where Charlotte is located, and counties, say, Raleigh, where the capital of North Carolina is. And these are considered to be the hubs for education. This is where the universities are located, the major universities, and this is the research and tech hub. So I had someone call my radio show, a young woman who was in college then, and she said, I am so proud of my county that we voted for same-sex marriage, and I'm so ashamed of the rest of North Carolina. And the fact is, these other people really don't understand. They're not educated. They don't have the facts. Now, the more I spoke with her, the clearer it was that her views were as bigoted as anybody's. In other words, her views were not based on careful interaction with the arguments pro and con. They were based on a gut-level emotional stand in one direction and a negative caricaturing of those on the other side without really giving thought to what is the meaning of marriage, what is the purpose of marriage in society, how does this affect children in the coming generations, does this open the door to other things, is there a reason that despite homosexual presence throughout history and even celebrated homosexual presence in some cultures, that marriage was never redefined historically until recently. No, it was not based on that. It was based on, we shouldn't be mean to gays. Or, well, I have a friend, and why can't she marry her partner? In other words, the same argument that you could use for why can't an adult father marry his adult son if he wanted to? Or why can't two adult brothers marry? Or whatever. Whatever. Bottom line is this. Her basic position, which I ended up putting out in article form, is why should the backwood bigots be allowed to vote? And because I'm educated secular universities, but I held to these conservative views, that would somehow put me in the class of the backwood bigots. And then Governor Perdue, the liberal governor, or previous governor of North Carolina, had to apologize for these comments subsequently. But after the vote went through, she was ashamed of North Carolina. She said, what are we, Mississippi? Oh, yeah, those people in Mississippi. Those uneducated hicks. You know, it's like the city mouse, country mouse thing. Well, you know, city mouse has something to learn as well about life. So it's an interesting perspective, but you'll hear it more and more. And this is the feeling you'll get, that the educated, the elite, the progressive, the wise ones, the ones who should lead our nation, they are voting for Hillary Clinton, of course. Of course, they voted for Barack Obama. But the uneducated ones, the basket of deplorables, the racists, the Islamophobes, the homophobes, the xenophobes, the ones who are all like David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. Yeah, those ones without college degrees, they're the ones being duped by charlatan like Trump. Now, I'm not making a statement here of endorsement for Donald Trump. You know the depth of my disagreement with Hillary Clinton and my prayerful hope that Donald Trump will continue to listen to godly counsel and will grow into what he would need to be to lead our nation. But I'm talking about the mindset. I'm talking about the judgment. And you have it on the campuses as well, which are overwhelmingly pro-liberal. And we're not talking about an honest exchange of ideas, and it's just clear that the liberal views win. No, we're talking about the suppressing of other ideas, the censoring of other ideas, just like CNN recently did when there was a Trump supporter who was put on TV as a hero because he saw there was a child stuck in a car, and hot car, 2-year-old, and the child could suffocate. And he broke the window with a sledgehammer or something and got the kid out. And he was wearing a T-shirt that said Trump 2016. And when it first aired on CNN's headline news, it just aired like that. But the next time they blurred the T-shirt out. God forbid that a Trump supporter should look like someone who had compassion or kindness or was heroic. All right, we'll be right back with your calls, 866-34-TRUTH.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Before I go to the phones, a couple of questions we've put out for you. One question. How important are these upcoming elections in your view? Another question, do you personally trust either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? If there was an issue where you had to entrust something to them personally, would you be willing to do that? Put aside the presidential issue. That's another question. And I mentioned this just in passing, the NFL protests, haven't gotten into that yet, and NCAA declaring war against North Carolina, saying that they are pulling championship games from North Carolina because of North Carolina's HB2. You talk about political correctness gone completely amok. A whole bunch of things to discuss with you. But another question I put out, your college education, how did it help you? How did it equip you for the future? 866-348-7884. Let's go to the phones. We'll start in Brooklyn. Sean, welcome to the Line of Fire.
How you doing? How's everything going, Dr. Brown?
Very well, thank you.
Good, good. My first take on how critical this election is, I think it's very critical, and the reason I believe this is because our government hasn't changed anything. If anything, it's made things worse in the last 8 years. And Clinton is only going to follow the same policies as Obama. So in order to make change or have change, you need to change the policies. So that's my take on how critical it is.
Yep.
I think it's very critical. The next question you had is, do I trust any either Trump or Hillary? I do not. Matter of fact, if I had a choice, I wouldn't vote either. I'm a Christian, and I believe that neither of them show Christian values and love their brothers and sisters. And it's proof, with the situation, obviously, my hands are tied, so I'm going to vote what I believe is the best scenario for my children. Mm-hmm. And for me, when it comes to the college education question, I have a college education. I've been in my career 20 years, but I was in my career 10 years before I decided to go to college. I only went to college to make myself higher pay, more viable. In all reality, I don't believe it had anything to do with advancing my career.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I'd be in the same spot due to what I do for a living.
So, all right, so overall, just overall, real quick, and I appreciate you weighing in so concisely on all my different questions, Sean. Just real quick,
yes,
overall life, overall equipping for life, for who you are as a human being, just beyond your career, did college play a good role in that? The classes, did that help shape you, or was that something that's really neither here nor there?
I think I think in college, due to the environment that I was in, it shaped my life in a negative value, in a negative means. because
got it.
Sin.
Yeah, so understood.
For me, I was in a secular college. So, and these colleges these days are, like you said, they're liberal all the way, and I'm not liberal. So that's where it has shaped me. But
got
then
it.
Again, I yeah, think yeah. we're in that position for a reason.
Yep, understood, sir. Understood. And how the colleges got as radically liberal as they are, so many of them, is a whole other question. I address it in a book that'll be out a year from now, so I'll tell you more about that as we get closer. Thank you, Sean, for weighing in. 866-348-7884. Hey, look, I have a problem with some young people voting. They have very little understanding of certain issues because of their age. In other words, there's only so much you'd entrust them with at a certain age, and yet their vote counts as much as the person who's carefully examined the issues for decades. But hey, if a young man or young woman is old enough to go off to war at 18, you better believe they need to have the right to vote at 18. And if you're not going to give them the right to vote it until 20 or 21, then don't expect them to go fight for the country either. So on that level, you can't have it both ways. Hey, I'm going back to the phones in a moment, but tomorrow at the same time, I'll be interviewing Jonathan Kahn about his new book, The Book of Mysteries. It will be a real eye-opener for you. And I'm gonna ask him a bunch of questions as well about, you know, his mystery of the Shemitah book, and did he prophesy things that didn't happen? And because people are asking that, or did things happen just as expected? But you can get the book. We've got a tremendous package. Go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and you'll see it right on the homepage. You'll see the special offer. Take advantage of it. All right, back to the phones. Let's go to New Jersey. Reverend Christian, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown, for taking my call. Dr. Brown, I'm calling. I called in about 2 weeks ago, but the reason I'm calling again today is I have a question to ask. The question I have is, you know, when people are saying Donald Trump is, he's a wicked, he's going to make a wicked president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get it. I get that, he's not thinking like most people would think. But, you know, when you think about wicked leaders we have had in the past, you know, i.e., you know, Adolf Hitler, Herod, Nero, Nebuchadnezzar, all right? These were wicked, wicked leaders that the world had ever seen in the past. But none of those leaders attempted to change God's order. You know, God's order in the sense of changing marriage, all right? And that's what Hillary Clinton is proposing, all right? So now she is calling Donald Trump voters basket of
deplorables. Yep.
How about her? Does she look in the mirror to see the plank in her eyes? Who is a deplorable? A person who is killing unborn babies in their mother's womb? A person who is advocating for same-sex marriage? How much more deplorable can you get?
Yeah, let me say...
Can she have the guts to call people deplorables? How
dare? Yeah, let me say this, sir, and I appreciate your passion and fire over this. Let me say this plainly. Yes, there are many questions about Donald Trump's character, his honesty, his unfaithfulness in marriage, greed, pride, for sure. But I would, if I had to choose between those things and work with someone to help them move forward versus someone who is committed to killing babies and feels in the womb, the woman's right to do it, and feels that's part of her Methodist Christian faith and redefining marriage, and that's part of her Methodist Christian faith. And then you add in the other character issues, the question of trustworthiness and honesty with Hillary Clinton. Oh, yeah, sir, I'm with you on that point. Absolutely.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is a joy. It is a joy to be with you on the line of fire today. 866-348-7884, the number to call. Before I go back to the phones, I just saw this article sent to me on LGBTQNation.com. So obviously, a gay website. South Africa bars American pastor over anti-LGBT hate speech. The article from Associated Press, South Africa has barred an American pastor who has made anti-gay comments from entering the country. Malusi Gigaba, the Home Affairs Minister, said Tuesday that Stephen Anderson and members of the Faithful Word Baptist Church of Tempe, Arizona, will not be allowed to travel to South Africa because they allegedly promoted hate speech. Gigaba says South Africa is still struggling to curb discrimination despite laws that are among the most, quote, progressive in the world. He says the country does not need more hatred advocated to our people. Anderson has made harshly critical comments about homosexuals. His church website lists a soul-winning marathon in Johannesburg on Sunday. Activists had urged South Africa's government to bar him from entry. I've got to be honest, I have mixed feelings on this. We're going to come back to America in a moment, but just want to weigh in this. I have mixed feelings. Number one, I am on record here on the line of fire and on video for completely denouncing his comments, celebrating the murder in cold blood of 49 men and women at the Pulse Bar, the gay bar in Orlando, Florida, in June. Absolutely deplorable comments that I denounced. And I had a colleague of his, Pastor Roger Jimenez, on the air and rebuked him for his vile comments, wishing the government could just line up all gays and lesbians and just shoot them down, saying all gays are pedophiles and gays cannot be saved. And I have a subsequent video just posted. If you go to thelineoffire.org, just click on Digital Library, you'll see it, where I refute his theology, alleging that homosexuals cannot be saved based on Romans 1. So I utterly oppose the ideology and where they're coming from, while at the same time, I steadfastly oppose redefining marriage. Marriage is the union of a man and woman as God intended it. I hold to the scriptures that homosexual practice, no matter how loving or committed, is sinful in God's sight in all circumstances. And I oppose the activist, LGBT activist goals to change America and other nations, except I agree that every human being should be treated with civility and kindness. And every human being is protected to, is entitled to equal protection under the law, but not the rewriting of the law and not new protections that didn't exist before. So I have mixed feelings. On the one hand, I fully understand why South Africa does not want someone coming into their country who celebrated the cold-blooded assassination of homosexual men and women or others that may have been in the gay bar in Orlando, Florida. I could understand why they would not want him coming into their country. On the other hand, how far does this go? And how politically correct does one have to be to get into a country like South Africa? So my views are polar opposite than Stephen Anderson's on some key points. On the other hand, I agree with millions of other, hundreds of millions of other conservative Christians about all these points I made about homosexual practice being sinful, homosexual relations being sinful, redefining marriage being wrong. Would South Africa then want to bar me? Would the same people that want to bar him not find enough difference in our position? Because face it, gay activists just look at me as one wacko who's not as crazy as this other wacko. One hate monger who's not as crazy as this other hate monger. That's how they look at it. They don't have many do. I mean, because I hear from them about these things. So we shall see. God willing, I might be going to South Africa in the next year or two. So we shall see. We'll be right back with your calls.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We have a duty and a responsibility. You can cite no precedent, nothing in the Constitution, no legal precedent. You know this is important to us. You now have your subpoena. We would all like to see this information.
That was Utah Representative, Republican Representative Jason Chaffetz. A subpoena has been issued to the FBI for Clinton probe records. And remarkably, check this out. Brian Pagliano, the IT professional who set up Hillary Clinton's private email server, did not show up to a House oversight hearing today, defying a subpoena by Congress. Whoa. And according to Representative Chaffetz, virtually every single email that Mr. Pagliano had has suddenly disappeared. 2015, this is an IJR.com article, 2015, Pagliano refused to answer questions regarding the Benghazi attack before Congress. He also received an immunity deal during the FBI's investigation into the State Department, which eventually led to no criminal charges against the State Department. And in June, during a deposition with watchdog group Judicial Watch, Pagliano pled the fifth more than 125 times during a 90-minute meeting. Will you all together say with me, yikes? Hillary Clinton, Mrs. Clinton, Clinton campaign team, Mr. Pagliano, what are you hiding? 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Washington, D.C. Richard, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes indeed. Thank you, sir.
The sad part about it is, when Hillary ran against Barack, I was four.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I thought she was the best choice at that particular time.
Yeah.
You know, the things that's happening in their campaign, even with her husband, and the people that disappear or even plead the fifth, is just, you just can't separate it. I mean, you just can't ignore it.
Yeah, and look, you know, there are always going to be conspiratorial theories. You know, I have people create stories about me, you know, and there are people I know, and I hear stories created about them. So you always have to sift and look for truth. But when you see a pattern over many years, you know, even the health issues, okay, we don't know exactly what's going on, and it could just be pneumonia, but whatever the deal is, was withheld from the public. And that's what concerns people. Look, if you do something wrong, you say, boy, I really blew it, and you come out with it, Americans tend to be forgiving people, but they don't like being lied to.
I'm going to tell you what a manager told me one day. Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
And there's definitely smoke in that house, in that campaign. Absolutely. I mean, you just can't get around it. The thing with Donald Trump, you know, people say what they want to say about him, but there's been how many presidents have we done had so far?
44.
44.
Yeah.
There's been probably 25 or 30 of a Donald Trump's prior to him. So, you know, even if Donald Trump is a mistake, it's not going to take 8 years to figure it out. So
yeah, I'll tell you, on a certain level, with Donald Trump, with a lot of the faults he has are quite obvious. You know what I'm saying?
He's not a politician, so he's not going to be politically correct.
Yeah, so he's the stuff he does wrong, the things he says wrong, his past, it's like that is pretty much open. The question would be, though, if elected, do we know where he'll really stand? But then the other thing is, how many people promise us one thing and then get elected and don't do it either?
That's what I mean by we've had, you know, 25 to 30 of a Donald Trump's prior to him.
I understand.
So it's not going to be the end of the world. And then even if he get in office, you know, people around him, And even the system itself is not going to allow him to do but so much.
Right, there's so much
right. damage.
So much he could, oh, right, only so much he could do independently. You know, could he bring down the way people look at America? You know, could he behave in a way that's embarrassing? I mean, those are the questions. But then flip it over. He's definitely changed a lot in his campaign since he's got new people around him. And since then, now he's made up a big deficit to Hillary Clinton and in some places is leading. So obviously he wants to win. So the other thing is, would he have the incentive, if elected president, to want to be a good president? In other words, even if he doesn't have the right moral values, would he want to be perceived as having them? And therefore, would he get good counsel around him? But Richard, the many things I could take away from what you're saying, but I want to repeat, it is not the end of the world either way. In other words, the church still has to be the church. The church still has to be the church no matter who's elected. We still have a role to play. We still have a job to do. And no matter who's elected, we should be praying just as fervently and giving ourselves to God and the Great Commission just as fervently. Hey, Richard, thank you for weighing in. 866-348-7884. We go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Victoria, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
I was just going to say, I heard about the question about the college, and I was just going to weigh in that, you know, I went to a liberal arts college, and I'm a devoted Christian. You know, I love the Lord Jesus Christ, and I am different in the fact that my major in college was musical theater, so all I ever learned to do was perform and memorize and act, and, you know, I wasn't really sure if I was going to go into that.
Yep.
I did a few things, but I'm actually a young professional. I'm in sales. I'm actually quite good at it. You know, I feel like, in a way, you know, in college it taught me how to work hard, how to memorize, how to perform, how mm-hmm. to love what I do, how to have energy. And it's weird. You can look back and think, you know, did it help me? You know, yeah, I really think it did. I think it helped me, you know, have to work no matter what the circumstance and deal with people. But mm-hmm. then on the other hand, I think, you know, if I didn't go to college, could I still have done as well? And I don't think I could have.
Yep.
Because my degree was so specific.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like you could put me in anything, and because I had to learn how to perform in college, I feel like I could do more things than other people. So I don't know. I feel like there is a difference, though, in my generation, because I'm in my 30s, than there is with the millennials right now, because everything is so handed to them. I feel like there is a difference in my work ethic than with other people that I see.
Now, how much of a debt did you accrue? Any?
I did accrue debt. It's still there, and I probably wouldn't go to a private college if I had to do that over again.
Right. So, if you don't mind my asking, how much did you end up owing at the end of your college experience?
Well, my parents paid for it while I was in school. That was the deal. And then 6 months after, no matter what job I got, I started paying it.
Okay.
And I think I have about, when I took it over, around a little over 30 grand left.
Okay. Right.
And
now
I probably have about 20.
All right. In plenty of schools, private schools, you could end up with well over $100,000 in debt when you're done. But obviously your parents raised you a certain way with trustworthiness and responsibility. That's a big part of it. But hey, I appreciate you weighing in, and I'm sure many others are nodding and saying, yeah, that mirrors their experience at all. If you're just tuning in, the context was allegations from some that the Republican Party is becoming more uneducated, and that, of course, would explain why more people are supporting Donald Trump, because that's a less educated position, and what does it mean for the future of the party and elections, etc. So I just wanted to address how useful or unuseful liberal arts or secular college was in your own life. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go over to Newburgh, New York. Stephen, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon, doctor. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Thank God. You spoke earlier on the young kids, 18 years old, voting.
Yeah, and just for the benefit of those just tuning in, what I said was, on the one hand, I have misgivings about an 18-year-old voting because they can be so ill-informed of so many things. Think of what your views were at 18 as opposed to 30, 40, 50. Yet, if an 18-year-old is going to go off to war and in some cases be required to with a draft, you better believe they should have the right to vote if they're going to have the, their responsibility to go to war. So that was my comment. Yes, so Stephen, your take.
Well, Doctor, when we had the draft, I agree that we changed. I was in that age group that we changed the voting age from 21 to 18. But now it's not a draft situation; it's a volunteer situation. So if you want the 18-year-olds to vote, they get their military card at 18 when they join, and they vote. Why are you letting the same thing Obama, he wanted to legalize drinking at the age of 18. That's just a way for them to get that 18.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, so that interesting thought. Here's the other question. Yeah, if you can't drink at 18, why can you vote at 18? Stephen, we got a break, but thank you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay. Hillary Clinton's health and honesty and disclosure and being forthcoming. Clip number four, Joey, this is from today. Former President Bill Clinton on with PBS's Charlie Rose discussing Hillary's health. She was doing fine after a good night's sleep. Now, I want to play the clip, and then I want to tell you something that was missing earlier when the interview was aired. Go ahead.
She has pneumonia.
Yeah.
Sometimes that can take a while, the recovery.
It can.
Is it possible that she will be away for weeks from the campaign trail?
No. Not a shot. I'll be lucky to hold her back another day.
Is it connected to the concussion? Is it connected to any other thing that's happened to her?
No. As far as we know, you know, she's undergone extensive physical exams since that concussion.
Okay. So he says that. These things that we shall see how she does getting back on the trail. We don't wish her evil, obviously, but I oppose her presidency, so or a candidacy for president. But here's what's interesting. This aired on CBS this morning on Monday. And the fact that, according to Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton has, quote, frequently fainted due to dehydration. That did not air on CBS this morning, earlier this week, so yesterday. And TMZ, which is what a celebrity gossip website, points out that the frequently part was edited out Monday's evening news. What's interesting is it was left in when a longer version aired today on CBS this morning. So sorry if I confused you. When it aired today on CBS this morning, it had the quote. When it aired on Monday's evening news, it did not have it. As TMZ.com says, it's only 3 seconds, so seems odd it would have been removed for time purposes. We've got a call into CBS, but no word back yet. So she's frequently fainted due to dehydration. That obviously raises concerns for other levels, just in terms of overall health. But peculiar, no. This report being accurate, if it is, peculiar that that was left out. 866-34-TRUTH. Greg, welcome to the Line of Fire, Shoreline, Washington. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You've kind of touched on some different issues, and one of them that impacted me at the beginning was the matter of college education.
Yeah.
And I've spent a fair amount of time in a college education, both at the University of Washington and Seattle Pacific U. And I'll have to say that my college education has been superbly important in my life on several different levels. And some of the complaints that you offered, I don't find to be substantiated. We routinely used, in my history classes, we routinely used original text. and so I was surprised to
hear that. How old are you?
Right now I'm 58 and a half.
Got it. Yeah, so just to point out that things were very different. I'm 61. Things were very different in our day with the educational system than in many schools today. It's not to say that there are some schools where the reading of classics is almost gone, actually. But yeah, things have changed a lot in terms of the insertion of ideologies. And let me say that when I had classes, say taught on ancient biblical history, they were taught by professors that were very skeptical of these things, and that was injected through the whole class. But we still did a certain amount of reading of primary texts. Seems to be less of that these days. So I think things have changed, which are surprising. But anyway, back to you.
Yeah, thanks. I did actually go back to college in my 30s. Now, that was still, obviously, 25 years ago. But here's the deal. Back then, when I was a young evangelical, I used to listen to the radio, and I would hear the exact same kinds of complaints that you're making now. I'd hear the same complaints about the public school system and how horrible they were and how they're doing this. And I ended up interning during that time, after that time, in two different public school systems and with young people. And I'll tell you, some of the hardest working people are teachers, and they're just trying to get the kids to learn reading, writing, and arithmetic. And I just found that, you know, you talked about getting a perspective. I find that where I see people's perspective being interjected is more in the evangelical community than anywhere else.
It's an odd thing because I've spoken to numerous educators, and they've told me about how overwhelmingly difficult it is for them because of the tremendous pressure of political correctness and how they are forced to teach things they don't agree with. Right in Charlotte, North Carolina, there was a woman in our ministry school who was teaching in a preschool. So that was for four-year-olds, and she was not allowed to call them boys or girls. That would be making a gender distinction. She had to call them friends. And she was required to read books to four-year-olds like Heather Has Two Moms. She ultimately quit the job because she couldn't do those things in good conscience. I had a college professor call me and tell me that on her campus, in her classes, which are in the arts and things like that, because they're not religious classes, she's not allowed to utter the word God. I pressed her on it. She assured me that was the case because it was not germane to her subject matter. Whereas I remember one professor telling me that when she started teaching a PhD in education at the school from which I got my undergrad degree, that she was shocked in the first faculty meeting that they were comparing notes with how many Christians they had picked off and quote, deconverted in the previous year or raised enough skepticism that they lost their faith. And they were comparing notes on it. And this discussion was probably about 15 years ago. So there is here, just check this out. Check out how many conservatives are invited to speak at commencement services, graduation services, graduation ceremonies, excuse me. You'll find it about 4 or 5 to 1 liberal versus conservative. Check the donations of the professors at Ivy League schools to presidential campaigns. You'll find them overwhelmingly Democrat versus Republican. Check out the vast majority, say, of biologists and or psychologists, and see where they are in terms of atheism. They will be 3, 4, 5 times higher than the overall population. Check out George Yancey's writing. There are several George Yanceys. This is an African-American professor, Yancey, who has done major surveys and is academic research on this and has discovered extraordinary bias against conservative views being voiced on college campuses to the point that some professors don't really let their views be known until they are tenured. So your experience, I'm not denying, but I would say it's quite different than the overall reality out there. Hey, thank you for calling. We're at the end of the hour. Friends, be sure to go to thelineoffire.org. Check out our recent articles, videos, and special offer. My bottom line today, no question, the world is worldly. The question is, will the church be like Jesus? We've got our finger on the pulse of the nation right here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let me speak to something happening in North Carolina. It affects the whole nation. So wherever you're listening around America and around the world, this is important. But in particular, everyone listening to me throughout the state of North Carolina, let me have your ear. NCAA, National Collegiate Athletic Association, has decided to relocate championship games from North Carolina for 2016-2017. As reported on the news, based on the NCAA's commitment to fairness and inclusion. Oh, those words. How those words get butchered. How those words get misused. How those words get abused. Based on the NCAA's commitment to fairness and inclusion, the association will relocate all seven previously awarded championship events from North Carolina during the 2016-17 academic year. The NCAA Board of Governors made this decision because of the cumulative actions taken by the state concerning civil rights protections. This is Michael Brown. You are listening to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. In its decision Monday, the Board of Governors emphasized that NCAA championships and events must promote an inclusive atmosphere for all college athletes, coaches, administrators, and fans. Current North Carolina state laws make it challenging to guarantee that host communities can help deliver on that commitment if NCAA events remained in the state, the board said. According to Mark Emmert, NCAA president, fairness is about more than the opportunity to participate in college sports or even compete for championships. We believe in providing a safe and respectful environment at our events and are committed to providing the best experience possible for college athletes, fans, and everyone taking part in our championships. Hang on for a second here. A year ago, it was perfectly fine to hold these events, was it not? It was perfectly fine. 1 year ago, there was no objection, there was no issue, there was no problem. And the laws now are basically what they were a year ago. Activists, radical activists in Charlotte messed things up for the whole state by basically declaring all public restrooms and locker rooms gender neutral, and by telling schools that you had to open up the locker room of 15-year-old girls to a 15-year-old boy who wants to play on the girls' sports team and says that he's a girl. So North Carolina State, after the radical actions of the Charlotte City Council, and if you're part of the city council, listen to me, give me a call, defend your view. If you were one of the ones that voted for these radical changes, or if you're one of those that supported these radical changes, give me a call, 866-348-7884. We'll have a civil discussion, or at least I can guarantee civility on my end. So all North Carolina did basically was put things back to the way they were before. No, we're now bigoted, homophobes, primitive, fighting the progressivism of today. Oh, so in other words, you're being fair and inclusive when you insist that a six-year-old girl in kindergarten share her bathroom with a six-year-old boy who identifies as a girl. You're insisting that he can't use a separate bathroom, that we must use the bathroom with the six-year-old girls, even if it confuses them. That's being fair and inclusive. And the 17-year-old girl who's been sexually abused and has a hard enough time changing and using the shower stalls along with her female friends at school, she now has to share it with a biological male. That's being fair and inclusive. And going to punish North Carolina for that? Are you kidding me?
Oh, God of burning, cleansing flame.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire. Do you ever feel like, well, what are we going to do? The NBA is coming against North Carolina. The NCAA is coming against North Carolina. The NFL bullied different cities over the issues of same-sex marriage or religious liberties or things like that. And the Obama administration is bullying school districts across America, saying you're going to lose federal funding and aid unless you adopt and embrace their radical LGBT activism. North Carolina could potentially lose, what is it, $4 billion-something dollars in federal aid. And on it goes. Yeah, it's bad. It's negative. So they're not positive. But this is the result of a sleeping compromised church. This is the result of a church that thought it could win the world by becoming like the world. A church that thought that the best way to impact the world was by bypassing the cross. A church that thought that by lowering the standards and making God's ways more palatable to rebellious human beings, that it would somehow advance the gospel. It does the exact opposite. And that's why we're in the situation we're in. It's a bad situation. What's the solution? Awakening. Revival. God's people awakening. Turning from sin. Pulpits awakening. Where the preachers of the gospel preach truth with love. And not a compromised, watered-down message. Thank God for all those who do. But what a shame, many more do not. 866-34-TRUTH. And I want to get back to schools because this is now tying in with the NFL protests and protests at the anthem. So I want to discuss that with you in a moment. But first, before we take your calls, Tammy Fitzgerald, the North Carolina Values Coalition, has issued a statement, quote, "There is an expectation of privacy when women and children go into the shower or locker room, and it's more than an expectation, it's a right, and our elected officials have a duty to protect that right. The NCAA is punishing the state of North Carolina because it dares to stand up for the common sense notion that everyone has a right to privacy, decency, and safety in bathrooms, showers, and locker rooms. The NCAA is guilty of extreme hypocrisy while it bullies the people of North Carolina to allow boys in the girls' locker rooms, showers, and bathrooms. It prohibits boys from playing on the girls' sports teams. 24 states have sued the federal government over the very mandate that the NCAA is now trying to force on the people of North Carolina." Exactly. Exactly. Friends, don't go to sleep on this. Don't just like, oh, what's on TV? No, no, no. These are issues that affect your liberties. These are issues that affect your children's future. What kind of education they get? What kind of rights schools will have? What about the Christian education that depends on being nonprofit tax exempt and receives tax exemption? What about those schools? What about church ministries that in the natural would be unable to function without that? Now, listen, plenty of countries don't have those things, and God provides. But it's going to, let's just say this, before the provision would come in many cases, it's going to be a lot of pain being weaned from our current system. How would it affect things, say, if the Christian school your kids are in is not allowed to continue because it will not have the rights it has, won't be recognized, whatever it is, because it does not embrace LGBT activism? Would that matter to you? In Canada, I don't know how far this went. I've been unable to track it recently. But a couple of years ago in the province of Ontario, I believe, that there was a move to require homeschooling parents not to teach what the Bible said about homosexuality and same-sex, quote, marriage during school times, which many homeschool parents will say is all the time. They use all different times of the day. And it could be sitting around the table for dinner and they'll talk about issues germane to their children's education. So not only was this extraordinary overreach, but then the question is, who's going to monitor that? How is that going to be monitored? They're going to come in your homes? So that's crazy. It could never happen. Well, you just tell me, if I told you where we are today in America 20 years ago, if you wouldn't tell me that's crazy, that'll never happen. If you doubt it, go back and see what you were reading and being entertained by and thinking about then, or how you responded to those of us who 10 years ago told you what was coming and many scorned it. Do not take this lightly, friends. Do not take this lightly. I am not Mr. Chicken Little, the sky's falling. I'm full of optimism, hope, confidence. By God's grace, I'm looking forward to a bright future in the Lord for many years to come and watching him work. And in God's kingdom, it's always bright and shining light, no matter how dark it is on the outside. But let's face the facts. There could be some real challenges coming. There could be some upheaval coming. Our lovely little world may get rocked. Hey, if that's what it takes to wake us up and get back to the Great Commission, so be it. But it's a shame it has to come like that. It's like the person that only after a heart attack that they barely survive, now they're going to change their diet and lifestyle. I'm glad they're changing it, but it would have been a whole lot better to change it before the crisis came, to avert the crisis so that it will never come. 866-34-TRUTH. Looking at this report here, February 2016, Washington Post, liberal intolerance is on the rise on America's college campuses. All right, so NCAA is National Collegiate Athletic Association, so we're talking college campuses. On Thursday, this was, let me just see here, it's back in February, so I don't have the exact date in front of me. Yeah, the week of the 11th, okay. On Thursday, the Higher Education Research Institute at the University of California at Los Angeles released the latest iteration of the survey, which included 141,189 full-time first-year students attending about 200 public and private baccalaureate institutions around the country. Another survey question asked freshmen whether they would participate in student demonstrations while in college. 8.5% said there was a very good chance they would. That, too, is the highest share on record. 1968, yeah, that was a totally tumultuous, revolutionary year in American history and in much of the world. So that was Columbia University's student takeover there. Just 4.5% of freshmen nationwide said they expected to protest. Wow, that's telling. Let's see. Our last freshman survey finding of interest, the highest share of students since 1973 now they consider themselves left of center. And the highest share of college freshmen ever, or at least since this question was first asked in 1970, call themselves far left. Why? Well, what's influencing them on the way up to college? Education they're getting, but even more, what's influencing them? Media and social media. Far left. Is it a surprise? No. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to... No, we won't. We won't. Let me throw out a couple of questions for you. I put this poll out an hour ago on Twitter, and we've just got our first, 169 votes. In your opinion, how important are the upcoming presidential elections? 27% say no different than before. 29%, very important. 44%, most critical in memory. Now, that means that 73%, with my three choices that I gave, 73% say very important or most critical in memory. Now, I could have given another choice to say not important at all, but I thought no different than before would cover that. So those that think not important at all, those that think, yeah, just like other elections, no, not more important than previous ones, they'd all be in that category. Otherwise, they would say very important or most critical in memory. Isn't that interesting? What's your take? 866-348-7884, the number to call to weigh in. And, a couple other questions I have here. Do I want to get to? Yeah. Let me throw this out. Repeated from the first hour. Do you trust Hillary Clinton or do you trust Donald Trump? No. Let me ask the whole question. I don't mean to be our next president. I mean, if you had to trust one of them, if they told you, I'm going to give you my word, who would you trust? if they looked you in the eyes and said, I'm telling you the truth, would you trust either of them? Would you trust one more than the other? If you had an urgent personal matter that you had to entrust your friend, hey, look, I'm going out of town. Can I entrust this to you to handle for me and to be responsible for and to make wise decisions? Would you trust Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton implicitly, explicitly, neither one at all, one more than the other? Just wondering. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I've got a question I want to put out in a moment about the NFL player protests of the national anthem and how that's trickling down into other settings. Good thing, bad thing. Good that they're taking a stand. Bad that they're taking a stand. Bad because they're taking the wrong stand. We'll talk about that in a moment. Bad because they're dishonoring the flag. Good because we need to challenge our heritage. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I was supposed to be today in Texas at a private gathering of a number of key Christian leaders from around America in the world of ministry, in the world of business, in the world of politics, having some discussions together. Having some discussions together about the elections and the church and what our attitude should be. And I offered three thoughts. I sent it in by way of video. With everything going on with my mom, almost 94, and just happy, content, sweet as ever. I posted a picture of from earlier today, being with my mom at the place where she's not a hospital, it's a rehab nursing place right now. Just posted a picture from our earlier time today. She's sweet, she's content, she's happy, but she's very frail. Of course, you don't know how much time you have left, almost 94 years old and getting more frail. But because of everything happening with my mom, she's not able to travel down to be at this gathering. By the way, if you want to see what my dear sweet mom looks like, I posted it on Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. Twitter, Dr. Michael L. Brown on Twitter, so Dr. Michael L. Brown on Twitter, and then my Instagram account. But you can find all of that just by going to my website, askdrbrown.org. You'll see all that info to connect, askdrbrown.org. But I sent just a short video, 2-3 minutes long, making three basic points. One is that the energy, the passion that goes towards the elections each year, we need to put towards the Great Commission and to prayer and revival. Politics are important. Yes, who we elect is important. We've seen that. The decisions made by our presidential leaders, the examples they've set, the direction they've pointed us has been quite consequential for years now. Undeniably so. Undeniably so. So the elections are important. No argument about that whatsoever. Whatsoever. However, we must put our greater emphasis, our greater commitment, our greater energy towards the things that God has given us to do and not get so caught up that this becomes the big thing. Come on, you know it. You're hanging around talking with people, having pleasant conversations, and suddenly elections come up and it's volatile. Whoa, volatile among friends, family. Church people dividing over it. I mean, you talk about all that, even doctrinal issues. Yeah, differ on that. It gets volatile. Wow. So we need to take that energy, passion, and put it towards the things God's called us to do. Vote, get educated, yes. But that is down the list in terms of the priorities for what God has called us to do. That's number one. Number two, whoever is elected, we need to pray with equal fervor. Why do I say that? As a white evangelical, what I've often seen my colleagues do is we're very upset with President Clinton for many reasons. Bill Clinton. So we pray and we pray and we pray and we cry out and we pray. And these next elections are really important, and they're going to determine the direction of America and so on. And we cry out, we pray, and we cry out, we pray. And then we get, say, George Bush elected, and then we take our foot off the gas. We basically stop praying. It's like, wait, that doesn't make sense. Is George Bush the answer? Is he the one that's going to turn everything around? The answer is obviously not. So, just because he's a human being, he's not going to have that much influence. All right. Many things he did well, other things not so well. But the point is, we pray like crazy. Oh God, oh God, oh God, move in these elections, bring the right person to power. We don't name them by name, but bring them in. And then we get someone in and we quit praying. So let's just say many of you think Donald Trump would be better than Hillary Clinton for whatever reason. And you're upset with Barack Obama, and you don't want 4 more years or 8 more years that will continue in the same vein. So even if it's Donald Trump, you may not like as much. But, okay, Trump, if he gets in, you better pray just as hard as if Hillary got in. That's number two. Number three, the big issue is not so much the presence of darkness, it's the absence of light. That is the big issue. The big issue is the church being the church. So if suddenly in our studios here, it got dark, I would not start yelling at the darkness. What's the matter with the darkness? No, I was speaking on Long Island Sunday afternoon, then going to fly home that night. And one of my friends was leading the worship. Pastor of the congregation was leading worship. And suddenly the power cut out, came back on, then cut out. So it was still bright enough in there because of the windows of the building there, and it was only, 4 or 5 in the afternoon. That was not a big problem. But, of course, the AC was off, started to get warm, and there's no mic anymore and no volume for the worship team. That happened to be a small gathering. It's an intimate gathering with a dear friend, and that was the last place I was speaking before flying home. But the problem is turn the power back on. Turn the power back on. Turn the power on. Get the lights on. We have a generator for the lights. The problem is not the darkness. The problem is the light. The problem is the absence of the power flowing through the electrical circuits. And it was a regional thing, just happened throughout that area there. So the big, big, big issue of the day, boil it down, is God's people living as God's people. The light shining brightly. The fire burning fervently. The salt being salty. God's people living like God's people, God's people praying like God's people, God's people preaching like God's people, God's people winning the lost like God's people, God's people caring for the poor and the needy like God's people, God's people giving themselves to the Great Commission like God's people should. If we'll do what God's called us to do, we'll see the changes we want to see, regardless of who's in the White House. Oh, there could be very, very negative consequences. Many of them, no argument with the Hillary Clinton presidency. And it's possible that there could be some real issues with the Donald Trump presidency. That, to me, is more up in the air. I believe if he continues to listen to godly people around him, or if he listens more and more to godly people around him, then the concerns would be less. But someone posted this. We could elect Hillary Clinton, lose America, but save the church. In other words, the church will awaken. Or we could elect Donald Trump, save America, lose the church, meaning the church will go on in its slumber. How about electing the best candidate, whoever candidate that is? I'm sure that Hillary Clinton is one that I oppose. That much I can say. Without endorsing Donald Trump, I can say I oppose Hillary Clinton. How about doing our best to elect the right candidate, and then all the more doing our best to shine the light in darkness and be the people of God? We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
unlock such mysteries as the portal, the mystery of the eighth day, the Maccabean blueprint, the bridegroom's visitation, the seven mysteries of the age, and much more. Enter a one-year odyssey with 365 different mysteries, one for every day of the year, with the Book of Mysteries by Jonathan Cahn.
I cannot wait until tomorrow, and I'm going to do a one-hour interview. It'll be before I come on here with Jonathan Cahn about his Book of Mysteries. Jonathan Cahn, best-selling author of The Harbinger and The Mystery of the Shemitah. He is super excited about this new book, so I can't wait to do the interview with him. And I'm going to ask him, what about the mystery of the Shemitah? Some say you prophesied things, they didn't happen. Others say, no, it's just what he laid out in the book. So we're going to talk about all of that. And when you order the book through our website, we have two exclusive things you can only get through our website. Number one, we'll also give you the one-hour interview with Jonathan. And number two, a mini book I've written for Jewish outreach and to open the eyes of believers called Seven Secrets of the Real Messiah that is not available for sale. And we'll be giving that to you with the book. To find out more before tomorrow's interview, go to thelineoffire.org and you'll see it right on the home page. This is Michael Brown. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I want to discuss some important moral and cultural issues and get your feedback. But first, lifenews.com reported yesterday, ACLU loses attempt to force Catholic hospital to refer patients for abortions. Good. It's a shame this even comes up. A shame anyone could think that in America, with our religious liberties, that a Catholic hospital could be put under pressure to refer patients for abortions. Catholic hospital in Michigan will not be forced to recommend abortions to patients after a federal court rejected a woman's lawsuit on Thursday. Tamisha Means, represented by the ACLU, filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops in 2013 after she claimed the Catholic hospital failed to present abortion as an option when her water broke at 18 weeks of pregnancy. Means says she was in excruciating pain at Mercy Health Partners Hospital in Muskegon, Michigan, and there was no chance that her unborn child would survive. In the lawsuit, she alleged that the hospital, which is under the direction of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, was negligent because she should have been presented with the option to have an abortion. The ACLU also claimed an abortion would have been safer for her than naturally miscarrying her child. And by the way, no one that is in healthcare that I could imagine being involved in a hospital and caring for mothers and children and others in need would relish the idea of this woman being in excruciating pain. And I would imagine they did what they could to alleviate the pain. However, you do not present an option that you believe is tantamount to murdering a child in the womb. You don't present that as an option if it violates your ethical foundation of life and medical practice. And what if there was someone who was suffering severe depression and was getting suicidal because the six-month-old child screamed and cried all night and they were a single parent caring for them and they felt they were going to lose their mind? You discard the child. You get rid of the child. You still don't have that as an option. Maybe get care for the child or try to get a way to get the woman away from the child so she can rest, etc. But you don't get rid of the child because that violates your ethic. Well, same thing here. Thursday, the federal judges upheld, so Thursday of last week, upheld an earlier district court. This is U.S. Sixth Court of Appeals. They upheld an early district court judge's decision to dismiss the case. And Judge Robert Holmes Bell threw out the case in 2015, saying Means' claim would, quote, impermissibly intrude upon ecclesiastical matters. It's a Catholic hospital. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. My joy and privilege to be on the air with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, by the way, everyone listening to me all over Dallas-Fort Worth area, just want to give you a heads up. I'll give you more details. Wednesday, September 28th, I'm scheduled to speak at a special equipping night at Gateway Church in Grapevine. Speak there at a special equipping event where we're dealing with having hearts of compassion and backbones of steel, dealing with the moral and cultural issues. And then the next day, we'll give you details where, when, how. It'll be Thursday night, September 29th, doing a special meet and greet with all of you listening to us throughout the DFW area. We're still getting some details together. As soon as we have those, we'll let you know about them. I was just mentioning a Catholic hospital. Let me stay on the issue of Catholicism for one moment. Senator Tim Kaine, Hillary Clinton's running mate, described as a devout Catholic. Well, his devotion to the Catholic Church has been questioned because he's pro-abortion. How can that be? And he's running with a radical pro-abortion candidate. But in a recent talk to the Human Rights Campaign, the world's largest gay activist organization that has me on their list of being guilty of exporting hate to the nations because we say kids should have a mom and dad and marriage should be a man and woman, so I'm exporting hate to the nations. At his talk at their annual fundraiser in D.C., he's expecting or hoping that the Catholic Church is going to change. Catholic Church is going to change its views. And he points to Genesis 1. Yeah, Genesis 1. Who am I to challenge God for the beautiful diversity of the human family? I think we're supposed to celebrate it, not challenge it. Senator Kaine, that was before the fall of man that God said everything was very good. Since then, he does not say everything on the earth is very good and we should celebrate it, not challenge it. In any case, I have an article that's getting a lot of attention. Devout Catholic Tim Kaine butchers the Bible to embrace gay radicalism. Read it by going to The Line of Fire, thelineoffire.org. 866-348-7884. Okay. The NFL protests, how do you feel about them? Do you feel it's good? Started by Colin Kaepernick sitting and then taking a knee during the national anthem. Others joining him. Do you feel good about these protests? Because they are drawing attention to perceived injustices in America. Or do you feel they're spitting in the very flag that has given them the liberties to do what they're doing and spitting on the memories of those who've sacrificed so much and those alive today who've sacrificed so much for our country so they could have the liberties? And all these players are making more money than just about any of us are ever going to make in a lifetime. What they do with it over a lifetime, of course, is their business, but they're making more money. That's because of America being what it is. Is this positive or negative? One team, all the players stood together, joined arms, but then one of the players raised his fist in a Black Power salute. Is that a positive, or does that associate him then with negative violent movements? And what about the idea that what's being protested is the wrong thing? In other words, to make the major protest an issue of, well, this is about white police brutality against blacks, is the wrong issue. Because according to studies that I've read, there's actually a higher percentage of black brutality against blacks than white brutality against whites, or say quicker to pull the trigger. And then what about white on white or black on white within the police? So maybe it's not systemic racism just as much as some police are too zealous. Some police use violence too quickly. Or some are just on edge for fear of their own lives. What about all the cops that get killed? And does this create an attitude of hostility towards police? What if there were larger issues being to which attention was being drawn? In other words, if it was the days of slavery and we had, you know, national anthem before a sports event, whatever sports were played back then. Yeah, what sports? Were there organized sports, say the 1850s, that were played widely all over America? Whatever they were, let's say you had the playing of the national anthem and people refused to stand because of slavery. I can understand that. So we honor our flag, but we're ashamed of where we are as a nation. So these good things are bad. 866-348-7884. Senator Ted Cruz yesterday expressed his disdain towards this. He said, to all the athletes who have made millions in America's freedom, stop insulting our flag, our nation, our heroes. And he fired back at basketball commentator Jalen Rose, who saluted NFL players and teams who peacefully protested. Quote, here's a peaceful protest. Never buy another shoe, shirt, or jersey of rich, spoiled athletes who dishonor our flag. And he said, it's sad when you see rich, spoiled athletes that don't recognize what an incredible blessing this country is. And he further said, after President Obama said that Kaepernick was, quote, exercising his constitutional right, Senator Cruz said, I was disappointed to see President Obama stand with Kaepernick and say, that's right, disrespect the flag. It's not the job of the president. The president should be standing up for America, and the president should be encouraging every American to honor the flag so many have bled and died for. Now, Colin Kaepernick, for his part, said he's not dishonoring the veterans and all of that, and he appreciates the country, but he's drawing attention to injustice. But again, his comments pointing to black-on-white violence and police, to me, that's not the biggest issue. That's not within the top five, maybe within the top 10 issues of the greatest issues that black Americans are facing today. Where it exists, let it be exposed. Where it exists, let it be renounced. Where it exists, especially if it's tied in with any type of systemic racism, let it be shouted from the rooftops. But there's so many other areas that are much more important, and it's almost as if you're ignoring what's most important and then looking at something just because there was a Facebook video that was posted. How about this? A Michigan, Todd Starnes, on toddstarnes.com, a Michigan school district called the historic Betsy Ross flag a symbol of hate and profusely apologized after students displayed the flag at a recent high school football game. Quote, to wave a historical version of our flag that to some symbolizes exclusion and hate injects hostility and confusion to an event where no one intended to do so, wrote Forest Hills Public Schools Superintendent Daniel Bem in a letter to parents. So this is the 13-star flag at the founding of the nation. At least one parent was shocked to hear students chanting USA and wearing red, white, and blue. So there is certainly an anti-patriotic spirit that is growing in many ways in the nation. And then, how about this? This was reported on Saturday. And let me just see where this is. In Philadelphia, Woodrow Wilson High School coaches and players take a knee during the anthem. And I see one guy standing. This shot, everybody else is kneeling. Woodrow Wilson, Phil Anastasia reported this in Philly.com. Woodrow Wilson High School football coach Preston Brown told his players before Saturday's season opener that he planned to take a knee during the national anthem. All but two of them followed his lead. And from what I can tell on the team, it looks predominantly, if not all, African American. Just to give you a demographic here, Brown and most of his assistant coaches, along with nearly all of the players, knelt while the national anthem was played on a hot, humid afternoon at Mike Rozier Stadium in East Camden. He said, I still love America. I still love our military. But this was our way of saying that things have to change in our country. There's oppression, there's social injustice, and these kids live it. Okay, why primarily are the kids in the shape they're in? If they're living it out, if they're experiencing problems, is it primarily because in their neighborhood they are kept down by whites? I would doubt that. Is it to say there is no racism and prejudice in America? No. We've talked about it many a time on the radio here. But it is to say the bigger problems there are the breakdown of the family. And a lot of the reason for the breakdown of the family is because of our whole government welfare system and making people into victims instead of productive contributors to the society and contributing to fatherlessness being rewarded with more money for children. There are policies that I believe are hurting black Americans. Absolutely. Policies and broken families. But you look at the crime, what's happening now, it's been dubbed the Ferguson effect. As police are getting less aggressive in their tactics and making sure they don't do things that could be called racial profiling, and are withdrawing from certain controversial practices, the crime rates are soaring. The murder rates are soaring. Is that positive? Is that good? So I'm just saying, by all means, protest injustice, protest problems. But how about pointing to the right problems for emphasis rather than just going with the standard narrative? By the way, my goal here is not to be popular. My goal here is to tell you the truth as best as I understand it and be your voice, a moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Straight to the phones. We come back on the other side of the break.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Just a reminder, we've got some cutting-edge videos and articles waiting for you to watch and read. Go to thelineoffire.org. You'll see right on the homepage latest articles and videos. And then just click on the digital library. Click for more. And we've got lots of things there, so worth looking for. TheLineOfFire.org, click on the digital library. I have responded to some rabbis. I have responded to a pastor who claims, according to the Bible, homosexuals cannot be saved. We've got teaching on what it really means to turn the other cheek. And again, my article response to vice presidential nominee Tim Kaine about his abusing of the scriptures. It is scriptural malpractice. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Fort Mill, South Carolina. Jeannie, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you for having this program on. You know, every 9/11, I lose about half the day watching tribute to people who were just heroic in so many different ways. And I was incredulous today to read that. I had a hard time believing that it's true that 7 NFL players did not stand for the national anthem on 9/11.
Yep, that was what Sunday was, the opening day of the season. And the opening Sunday of the season. And yes, there were a number that did not. And of course, this was the worst case scenario for the NFL to draw attention to that of all days to not stand. And you know, my wife, Nancy, because of losing her brother on 9/11, but also out of sympathy to other victims, spent a lot of hours watching things. And of course, it's devastating and painful and agonizing. And you have to say, okay, what is that flag stand for? That would be the point. Is it saying America's perfect? No. Is it saying we don't have problems? No. But it is speaking of the best of America and what we represent, hence the standing and the recognition of the sacrifice for it. So yes, you do speak for many in being indignant and shocked, Jeannie. Thank you. Thank you for weighing in and speaking with tears. 866-34-TRUTH. In Plano, Texas, Bethany, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. We're excited to see you here in Dallas-Fort Worth soon. And I know there'll be a crew of us there. I'm ready to meet you and everything, receive you well.
Wonderful.
So I grew up in Garland, Texas, and I did not come from a very wonderful background. My school, my high school was about, I would say, 80% black. And as a white kid there, you know, I was able to witness firsthand about, I guess, what people call reverse racism now or whatever. But also about how, you know, kids, you know, when I grew up all through elementary school, middle school, you know, kids are born with the ability to tell the difference between what somebody looks like, but they're also born with this beautiful inclusion that's inherent.
Are.
And whenever you see the evolutionary sort of process going all the way through high school, you see people start to segregate themselves. And I noticed this first when I was in 10th grade. These kids were segregating themselves according to their cultural relativity. They were sitting next to people who were like themselves. So whenever you saw these kids who had broken homes or fathers that were gone or, you know, who were pregnant at 14 or 15, you had, you know, them all sit together and they were supporting each other. And you see this systemic issue, like you were saying, it is not so much racism as it is. There is an education problem. There is a family support problem. And the violence that they promoted on each other was absolutely insane. It was all violence.
Yeah. So again, there are larger cultural issues where there is injustice. And look, when you say you experienced reverse racism, so then you have to say, okay, in a largely white culture, it's understandable that blacks will experience racism. I'm not justifying it for a split second. Or Hispanics will experience it, or Asian. In other words, whoever's the dominant culture, it's very easy for another culture to experience prejudice or mistreatment, especially with our history with African Americans. But let's put things in a larger context. Say, okay, but what are the issues that we can address? Wherever that exists, racism, prejudice, discrimination, we must address it, especially as followers of Jesus. We must lead the way in addressing it. But if we're trying to fix a problem, what are you going to fix? You know, if you've got somebody being rushed into the emergency room and they're bleeding from the brain and they also have a broken left pinky toe, you're going to work on that bleeding on the brain first. That's the more urgent matter. So as you look at America across racial lines and across other divisions, what are our biggest problems? That's what we've got to draw attention to and emphasize. Hey, Bethany, keep spreading the word. September 28th will be at Gateway Church. And then we're going to have a special meet and greet for our listeners. Location details to be announced Thursday night, September 20th, 29th. So help spread the word. The more, the merrier. All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Jonah Goldberg, National Review. We live in an age where victimhood is the new currency. Victims, a new kind of aristocracy. And pity, a cardinal virtue. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina. Ron, you are on the line of fire.
Yes. Yes. Michael?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay, well, here's the thing. I couldn't be insulted more. The things that you said about, you know, the black American condition and the condition of our communities. I think you have to kind of stick more to religion, you know, something you may know a lot more about.
Well, Ron, I'm only reflecting what endless African-American callers and leaders have said to me for many, many years, that the great issues are the breakdown in the family, and that I blame largely on the system. I don't blame the families. I blame that largely on the system and welfare and policies that have been instituted that have hurt black Americans, not helped black Americans. But I'm only saying what endless African-American callers have said to me for years now, and pastors and leaders.
I've been an African American for 41 years, and I never run into any African American that are saying that basically, you know, that you can't, you know, I can't expect a police officer to pull me, you know, pull if my taillight is out, that he pull me over as a citizen of this country and give me a ticket for a taillight or tell me that my taillight is out without worrying about being shot and killed.
You are absolutely right, sir. You have been racially profiled, and I have not. I've said that 1,000 times over.
Right.
My point is that is not the biggest problem in the community. The biggest problem is the breakdown of the family. But I don't minimize that at all, sir. I've said that.
Well, you can speak that for you. You can't speak it for African Americans. They have to be the one to say that.
But they have. But they have for years. For years, Ron, on this very radio show, for years.
Well, I'm saying this.
And they're 70, 80, and 20, and 30. They're all ages.
Well, listen, when it comes to the breakdown of the family, you have to understand the institutionalized racism that slavery has instituted, that the Jim Crow laws have instituted, even in the schools, you know, with the curriculums or even institutionalized racism.
Yeah. So the system. The system has hurt the family. That's my point.
Right.
The system has hurt the family. I'm not blaming the family, sir. And listen, do me a favor. I've got to run. Try to call me back, and we'll let you on. All right? Normally, we have a limit in terms of how often someone can call. Call when you can, tomorrow if you can, or next week. I want you to express yourself more fully. In no way do I want to insult you or offend you. Please, call back. All right? I'm just out of time. My bottom line today, only as we humble ourselves together will we move forward as a nation.